Wow, we got dual trials today. I mean, how do you like that? A lot going on at this moment in time. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to the program. This is the Trish Regan Show. I am Trish. And as I said, Supreme Court and New York City, dueling trials. And you know what? I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to go on a limb. I have a feeling that one in New York ultimately may not matter so much because the biggie, the big one in Washington, D.C., is actually going to prove victorious for the president, former president of the United States. Let's listen to him here in New York complaining because he can't be at both places at once, right? And the judge in New York is like, nobody, you're going to sit here. You're going to sit here all day long. Hear the president.
So in the meantime, I'm at this trial. My constitutional rights have been taken away from me. But every single expert, every legal scholar, every respected scholar has said this is no case. There is no case here. This is just a political witch hunt. Thank you very much.
A political witch hunt. I mean, listen, at some point, you know, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. They've tried. They've tried over and over and over again to get him on something. And they keep failing. And again, my prediction on this one is that you're going to have a divided Supreme Court. But ultimately, they're going to make the decision that a president needs to be able to have a certain amount of autonomy and thus immunity in order to do his or her job. All right? That's just the reality of the gig. But this had to get explained out multiple times here to some of the justices. And it's very interesting how they are sort of down these party lines. I mean, that's in fact what we heard. I want you to hear first from Justice Sotomayor. Because she feels very strongly, right? You cannot have immunity because somehow now, like, all hell is going to break loose if they think that they have the ability to just do anything. I mean, she's kind of taking it one step too far, but I'll let her walk down this path. Let's listen to Justice Sotomayor.
Can be alleged, but it has to be proven. Malum in se is a concept long viewed as appropriate in law, that there's some things that are so fundamentally evil that they have to be protected against. Now, I think, and your answer below, I'm going to give you a chance to say if you stay by it, if the president decides that his rival is a corrupt person and he orders the military or orders someone to assassinate him, is that within his official acts that for which he can get immunity?
It would depend on the hypothetical.
Kind of seems like a stupid
well
question, does it not?
He could, and why? Because he's doing it for personal reasons. He's not doing it at, like President Obama is alleged to have done it, to protect the country from a terrorist. He's doing it for personal gain. And isn't that the nature of the allegations here? That he's not doing these acts in furtherance of an official responsibility. He's doing it for personal gain.
I agree with that characterization of the indictment, and that confirms immunity, because the characterization is that there's a series of official acts that were done for an unlawful
purpose. No, because immunity says even if you did it for personal gain, we won't hold you responsible. How could that be?
That's an extremely strong doctrine in this court's case law in cases like Fitzgerald.
Well, we go back to Justice Thomas's question, which...
Okay, so in other words, she's getting out of her on her skis on this one in a big way. They want to say that somehow J6 was some kind of attempt to totally steal the whole government, and therefore, even though, you know, and we can rehash this, I've done a lot of reporting on this with you guys, and you know how I feel, especially the fact that somehow the only footage we ever got to see was Nancy Pelosi's daughter's footage, for goodness sakes. Alexandra Pelosi, yeah, she was invited inside with the camera. And then they spun that over and over and over again. CNN bought it, or maybe was given it by Alexandra. and it was treated as a CNN exclusive, and they just kept playing this in a loop over and over and over again. They didn't tell you that it was Alexander Pelosi's daughter's footage after a while. But you're expected to believe and only believe that Donald Trump was out to steal the election and take the system. And then the march on Capitol Hill, et cetera, was all his fault. Even though, of course, Nancy could have called in the National Guard and she chose not to. So I have some pretty strong opinions on that. But they're trying to use that like they're trying to use everything to go after him. And so he's saying, well, wait a second. Shouldn't I be immune from some certain things? I mean, hey, Gorsuch, Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch brought this up in the hearings just the other day. Because, I mean, if you want to suddenly say that if you are disrupting a federal procedure, which they're alleging then that Donald Trump did by not somehow disseminating or maybe tweeting or doing whatever he could have done to stop the protest. If you somehow are interrupting the federal procedure, then you are guilty of a mega crime. To which, hey, you know, I'm just wondering why the heck Rashida Tlaib's little group that decided to go march on Capitol Hill isn't in a little more trouble. Or, and Gorsuch brought this up, why Bowman, Representative Bowman, is not in more trouble, considering that he actually deliberately, and there's video of him doing this, I've showed it to you, pulled a fire alarm ahead of a budget vote. Is that not interrupting a federal proceeding? Let's listen to Gorsuch making this point just a couple days ago.
Ought to be. Instead, we think the relevant similarity is obstruction of an official proceeding, because that's the language Congress chose.
General, if that's the case, what work does authorize do on your theory? Because I think I might, as I'm hearing you, think that whoever corruptly obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so stands alone. And the otherwise, I'm not hearing what work it does. Can you explain to me what work it does on your view?
Yes. So the work that otherwise does is to set up the relationship between C1 and C2 and make clear that C2 does not cover the conduct that's encompassed by C1. Now, I acknowledge that there
would be beyond that, beyond saying, okay, C1 does some things and the whole rest of the universe of obstructing, impeding, or influencing is conducted by C2. Is that a fair summary of your view?
Yes, but there was a good reason for Congress to do it this way.
No,
it traces
understand.
To the statutory history.
I understand that.
And I would just say that...
If I might. So what does that mean for the breadth of this statute? Would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify? Would a heckler in today's audience qualify or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison?
There are multiple elements of the statute that I think might not be satisfied by those hypotheticals, and it relates to the point I was going to make to the Chief Justice about the breadth of this statute. The kind of built-in limitations are the things that I think would potentially suggest that many of those things wouldn't be something the government could charge or prove as 1512 C2 beyond a reasonable doubt, would include the fact that the actus reus does require obstruction, which we understand to be a meaningful interference. So that means that if you have some minor disruption or delay or some minimal outburst,
okay,
we don't think it falls within the actus reus.
My outbursts require the court to reconvene after the proceeding has been brought back into line, or the pulling of the fire alarm, the vote has to be rescheduled, or the protest outside of a courthouse makes it inaccessible for a period of time. Are those all federal felonies subject to 20 years in prison?
So with some of them, it would be necessary to show nexus. So with respect to the protest outside the courthouse, we'd have to show that, yes, they were aiming at the proceeding.
Yeah, they were trying to stop the proceeding.
Yes, and then we'd also have to be able to prove that they acted corruptly, and this sets a stringent mens rea. It's not even just the mere intent to obstruct. We have to show that also, but we have to show that they had corrupt intent in acting in that way.
We went around that tree yesterday.
I know. I heard the argument yesterday. But I guess what I would say is that to the extent that your hypotheticals are pressing on the idea of a peaceful protest, even one that's quite disruptive, it's not clear to me that the government would be able to show that each of those protesters had corrupt intent.
So mostly peaceful protest that actually obstructs and impedes an official proceeding for an indefinite period would not be covered?
Not necessarily. We would just have to have the evidence of intent. And that's a high bar.
They intend to do it, all right.
Yes, if they intend to obstruct and were able to show that they knew that was wrongful conduct with consciousness of wrongdoing, then yes, that's a 1512C2 offense.
And what does corruptly add, in your view?
So corruptly adds the requirement that the defendant's conduct be wrongful and committed with consciousness of wrongdoing. And this trace...
I just going to say, when you listen to that, I'm telling you, sounds like Representative Bowman ought to be going to jail for 20 years, right? I mean, if you're going to subscribe to that kind of belief, and this is where you get into trouble, folks, right? Because they want the law to be manipulated to work for them, but never against them, only to work for them against conservatives, specifically one in particular being Donald Trump. And so you can't have a system that way, right? Because then you don't have a fair legal system in any way, shape, or form. So I think what you're going to find here is that there are some politics at play. Shouldn't be, but there are. And thus, you're going to have your liberal justices saying, oh, you know what? He's not going to get immunity. Now, you know, you got to think about the immunity issue, really. What is that? Because if you actually don't have immunity and people want to get extraordinarily political, let's be very clear, you know, it can backfire on the left as well. So if the right is in there and, hey, I don't know, somebody like Obama sends some drones over into Syria and wind up inadvertently, mistakenly killing a couple Americans, this happened, by the way, then I would think those families could sue former President Obama. And he should go to the slammer, right? I mean, that's something that could happen if you don't have immunity. But it's been accepted and understood, frankly, that you have a certain kind of immunity. It's just this is the first time it's actually been put on display. And so I want to show you this one because Ketanji Brown Jackson, KBJ, she started to question the Trump lawyer who... is giving RFK a run for his money in terms of his vocal prowess. So just manage through that, if you would. You have to listen very, very carefully. Anyway, this is the Trump lawyer, and she's just trying to go back at him over and over and keeps interrupting him, and he kind of says the really obvious thing, which is that, you know what, like, this is just kind of the way it works. I want you to hear this short clip. Let's play Ketanji Brown Jackson trying to grill the Trump lawyer, John Sauer.
Benjamin Franklin said, as we view the prosecution of a chief executive as something that everybody cried out against as unconstitutional. And what George Washington said is, we're worried about factional strife, which will...
No, I'm also... Let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office? It's right now the fact that we're having this debate because OLC has said that presidents might be prosecuted. Presidents from the beginning of time have understood that that's a possibility. That might be what has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office.
I respectfully disagree with that because the regime you've described is the regime we've operated under for 234 years. There has not been an expectation based on 234 years of unbroken political...
All right, let me ask you another question.
That might occur.
Let me...
Okay, she didn't like the answer to that. She had to go back again and interrupt him over and over and over again. Look, you know what? If you don't have immunity as the president of the United States, and we're not saying you can do really wacky, crazy things. I think over on MSNBC, they're like, oh, great. Now he can just, you know, murder his wife and get away with it. No, that's not what we're talking about here. OK, we're talking about having a certain kind of immunity for political reasons, because the last thing that you want, ladies and gentlemen, is for the other side, for purely political motives to come in, as this one has done, and be able to attack you, as we see happen in other parts of the world. I mean, just go down to Argentina or Venezuela or Brazil. the current president of Brazil, Lula. He was in the slammer. He got out. His vice president was also in federal prison. I mean, this is how they, this is their MO, right? That's how they operate. Because as soon as the other side comes in, they go, okay, we're going to take you to task. And so there should be some kind of protection, expectation, that just because you have a shift in power doesn't mean that they're going to put you in jail. And Donald Trump is making the point that if you don't have this kind of immunity, then you're really, truly a sitting duck. You're at risk. Here he is outside his other trial going on today there in New York. Let's listen to him make the point.
I think that the Supreme Court has a very important argument before it today. I would have loved to have been there, but this judge would not allow that to happen. I should be there, but he wouldn't allow it to happen. I think he puts himself above the Supreme Court, which is unfortunate, isn't it? But the argument on immunity is very important. The president has to have immunity. This has nothing to do with me. This has to do with a president in the future for 100 years from now. If you don't have immunity, you're not going to do anything. You're going to become a ceremonial president. You're just going to be doing nothing. You're not going to take any of the risks, both good and bad. I mean, you're going to make some great decisions and save the country. You're going to make some decisions which are unfortunate, but that's the way it is. But you're not going to do anything if you don't have immunity, because otherwise you're going to be prosecuted after you leave office for doing something like going into an area, going into a country, doing lots of things that you wouldn't be doing. And we don't want a ceremonial president. We have to have a real president. And assuming you have the right person, that can make a big difference. You saw that for 4 years. When I was president, we were respected all over the world. We had.
You know, he's making some really important points there. I want to go to some comments from Mike Davis, who used to be a Supreme Court clerk. He's part of the Federalist Society, and he made these on Twitter, and they are pretty important to hear right now. He made the point that Biden is attempting to establish a dangerous precedent that presidents can face prosecution for their official acts. If presidential immunity doesn't exist, then a Trump 47 Justice Department could prosecute Barack Obama for capital murder for ordering a drone strike on two American citizens, one of whom was a minor. That was what I was just telling you about. Joe Biden, he writes, could also face prosecution for his illegal mass parole of millions of illegal immigrants and their resulting crimes. George Bush and Dick Cheney could face prosecution if they lied to drive us into the Iraq war. This is not a path that we want to go down as a country. This unfounded assault on Joe Biden's chief political opponent is a grave threat to our system of government. Well said, Mike Davis. In other words, what are you doing? Why are you opening a kind of Pandora's box like this for purely political purposes? I've told you guys this before, but I'll share the story of Donald Trump telling me when I asked him, I'm like, hey, so why didn't you go after Hillary Clinton? You know, the whole bleach bit with the server, et cetera. Why didn't you pursue that? And he said to me, you know, Trish, like it's the United States of America. Like it really doesn't look good if we're like throwing everybody. I mean, he's actually a pretty magnanimous person. And I think when he gets pushed into the corner, he's like, okay, the gloves are off. And I have a feeling like if he's back there, the gloves might just be off. Everybody's going to want immunity. They're going to say, thank you, sir, for having put this thing in. I mean, because really and truly, you could go after a lot of politicians for all kinds of things, right? Because things happen. Things happen. Mistakes happen. In terms of J6, you want to go after him for that. I mean, wow. I mean, can we go after Nancy Pelosi, who failed to call in the appropriate reinforcements? Maybe we should. In terms of Fannie Willis and trying to go after him down in Georgia. Because he dared to say, hey, you know, can I challenge this? Apparently you can't challenge anything. No, if you challenge something, then you're in violation of the law. If you come up with an alternate slate of people to verify the election, because, you know, you want to have an alternate just in case. Oh, that's in violation of the law, even though they did that in Hawaii with Kennedy way back when. Listen, guys, I mean, this is just out of control. I think it's very obvious that it's out of control, but frightening that it's this out of control. I do think ultimately it comes down to a historic win for President Trump and a historic win for the country. And I don't think that you're going to have crazy people doing crazy things. I think it's merely going to serve as a means to help protect future presidents from this political vitriol, which is clearly really, really abundant. Just so abundant. I mean, think about this one. I mean, FDR, this came up. And the counselor to Special Counsel Smith, you know, Jack Smith's guy, was talking about how today FDR could have been charged with conspiracy against civil rights for his decision to intern Japanese Americans. Now, I'm not saying it was a good decision, right? Like, I mean, it was really, really kind of a horrible time, and we were at war, and it was a different time. And there were decisions made at that time that had to do with national security. So what, you like prosecute him after the fact and you send him to jail when he's making a real-time decision? That doesn't seem like it would be fair, right? But let's listen to this exchange happening just moments ago there at the Supreme Court.
It is correct, Justice Alito, but I think that we should also consider the history of this country. As members of the court have observed, it's baked into the Constitution that any president knows that they are exposed to potential criminal prosecution. My friend says after impeachment and conviction, we don't read the impeachment judgment clause that way, but it's common ground that all former presidents have known that they could be indicted and convicted. And Watergate cemented that understanding. The Watergate smoking gun tape involved President Nixon and H.R. Haldeman talking about and then deciding to use the CIA to give a bogus story to the FBI to shut down a criminal investigation.
I mean, Mr. Sauer and others have identified events in the past where presidents have engaged in conduct that might have been charged as a federal crime. And you say, well, no, that's not really true. This is page 42 of your brief. So what about President Franklin D. Roosevelt's decision to intern Japanese Americans during World War II? Couldn't that have been charged under 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against civil rights?
Today, yes, given this court's decision in Trump versus United States, in which Trump versus Hawaii, excuse me, where the court said Korematsu is overruled. I mean, President Roosevelt made that decision with the advice of his attorney general. That's a layer of
safeguard. Is that really true? I thought Attorney General Biddle thought that there was really no threat of sabotage, as did J. Edgar Hoover.
So I think that there is a lot of historical controversy, but it underscores that occurred during wartime. It implicates a potential commander-in-chief concerns about the exigencies of national defense that might provide an as-applied Article II challenge at the time. I'm not suggesting today. But the idea that a decision that was made and ultimately endorsed by this court, perhaps wrongly, in the Korematsu case, would support criminal prosecution under 241, which requires under United States versus Lanier that the right have been made specific so that there is notice to the president, I don't think that would have been satisfied.
All right. Well, we could go through other historical examples. I won't do that. Let me just touch briefly.
So, again, I think that the problem that we're having in this moment in time is that they want to have this sort of two-tiered system, right, where they get to use the law as a kind of lawfare. And so that is inherently just a major problem, right, for the country in the here and now and, of course, for the future. And so as I listen to these arguments, and there's been about 3 hours of them, I really think the upshot is that these justices are leaning towards actually acknowledging some of these immunity claims, because you can't have a situation where the next side comes in and says, okay, well, we don't want that person running again. We don't want that party existing again. Let's do everything we can legally to be able to go after them. I mean, this is exactly what we're witnessing, ladies and gentlemen, in real time. Sometimes I say to myself, but why? Like, why him? I think it has a lot to do with him being so different, so much not part of the system. He's not somebody who came up through the ranks. He doesn't play by their set of rules. He's very much sort of, let me look at this in a plain vanilla, obvious way, I don't need to have your buckets and buckets and buckets of intel. Let me just like deal with this as a normal human being, because, you know, this is what CEOs do. People in the business world, you know what? You got to make money. So you look at things simply and often very innovatively. But in Washington, you don't care about that. Like, you don't care about results, right? You only care about getting elected. So they don't look at things, or if you're part of the operation, right, you think about just keeping your job. And how frightening is this? I mean, you think about the CIA really not having anything to do after the Cold War, right? Once that was over, like, they're sitting around twiddling their thumbs. What are they going to do? You know, they can't fight the Soviets anymore. And that was when you came up with NATO, and NATO started its expansion, and so on and so on, to the point where we're now looking at, well, a full-blown war, obviously, over there, but a new kind of Cold War that's been bubbling up and, well, helping them, I guess, helping them stay in business. And so someone from the business world is going to say, wait a second, we need to cut that department. We don't need them, right? Like, they're dead weight. And government's like, no, we need more. We need more of them, because they don't care about dead weight. Money is irrelevant. It is something that you can just literally print in their estimation. So the Supreme Court is trying to be thoughtful about this. Look, if you look at any of the media today, I'm not on a limb here. The New York Times thinks the Supreme Court's actually going to go with Donald Trump. I'm reading the headline right now in the Wall Street Journal that I'm bringing to you. Supreme Court appears open to some of Trump's immunity claims. This is the New York Times. Supreme Court conservative majority seems ready to limit election case against Trump. For sure. For sure. I mean, I don't think we have the soundbite right now, but it's one of my favorites. Hillary Clinton in August of 2020. So just weeks before the November election, went on one of her friend's podcasts, somebody who used to be on her PR team. And she was offering advice for Joe Biden. Her advice was that you fight it no matter what. No matter what. If it looks like it's close at all, you fight, and you don't give up. And so that's what she was saying going into the election. But when Donald Trump dared to fight it because it was close in some places, then suddenly he's trying to take over the country and become a dictator and this, that, and the other. All right, you see the hypocrisy. You see where this is going. Anyway, the justices, I suspect, are going to rule in favor of having some immunity. And so this is going to put Fannie Willis out of business. This is going to put a whole bunch of people, Jack Smith, out of business. Pretty much most of his case will be utterly destroyed as a result of this. And it leaves us with, oh, Judge Mershon's case and Alvin Bragg and this whole quote-unquote hush money because somebody signed an NDA for $130,000. I don't understand what's illegal about that, by the way. Your friend, David, runs a journalist organization. I say journalist in quotations because it's the National Enquirer. But hey, we should put the New York Times occasionally in quotations too, because the New York Times is the one that was perpetuating and promoting and dropping sort of hints and whatever about Tulsi Gabbard being a Russian spy, right? Like, they do what they have to do to go after their opponent. Look what they're doing to Donald Trump. Look at the whole Russia tape thing, right? The dirty dossier thing. I mean, they were reporting on that as though it was fact, day in and day out. CNN was, MSNBC was, and yet it was all bogus. So, you know, hey, those in glass houses really shouldn't be throwing stones, right? So David Pecker over there, you know, he is what he is over at the National Enquirer, saying, well, I'm going to help my friend. I mean, is that any different than Rachel Maddow putting out a bunch of you-know-what to help her friends? I don't think so. Again, I don't see how any of that is actually illegal. I really don't. But who am I? Who am I? I mean, I'm the one who said I don't really think it's illegal that he did a deal with Deutsche Bank and he valued his properties at a certain amount, which, yes, helped him get a lower rate on his loan. But Deutsche Bank did its due diligence and agreed with the valuations and agreed to do the loan. And by the way, got paid back in full. Therefore, you have no victims in that case. And yet, They slap him with $500 million in fines because they want to go after his stuff and take his property and try and ruin his life. And then when it gets knocked down to $175 million, Letitia James says, well, I don't trust the bond company. I want his stuff, right? Because she just wanted to go after his property. I mean, it's really kind of sickening. It's really sickening. And I suspect it will ultimately help him win this election, ladies and gentlemen. Win indeed. And when he wins, and I have more on that because I've got a new poll out I want to share with you. But when he wins, he's going to need the wind at his back, which means he's going to need the Senate and he's going to need Congress. He needs as much support as he can get, which is one of the reasons why I've been proud to partner with Americans for Prosperity. AmericansForProsperity.org. You should go there and check them out. On Monday, one of their brilliant, brilliant policy leaders is going to be joining this show. So we'll talk with her a little bit more about the challenges here ahead. Should Donald Trump win, the importance of having everybody that you can to really get the kinds of policy through so that, well, we have a better economy, so that we have a stronger border, and so that we're not making reckless mistakes all around the world, engaging in military conflicts that really aren't going to be for the betterment of us and the American people. So AmericansForProsperity.org, I do encourage you to check them out. Just a wonderful group. Sign up. Oh, see how excited I am about them? I'm losing my pen. Anyway, AmericansForProsperity.org. I mentioned how bad the economy is. I mean, I don't need to tell you. You know how bad it is. You go to the grocery store, you go out to dinner, you try to book vacations, and you see it, right? You know how much your rent is. You know how much your mortgage is. You know how much more money you are spending in the gas tank every single week to go to and from work. You know. But Joe Biden thinks he can pull a fast one on you. Yeah, you know, even though there's a GDP report out today showing that, wow, we hit, you call it a speed bump, or even more than that. I love this site, Zero Hedge. Those guys are really great over there. They write in their headline, stagflation shock. GDP stuns with lowest print in 2 years, below lowest estimation as PCE comes in red hot. All right, so just to back up a little bit about this, this doesn't really surprise me. In other words, the economy is not really growing, not the way it needs to, not the way it should be in light of, you know, all the low interest rates we had for so long. The U.S. economy grew at a meager 1.6% annual rate, and inflation surged higher in the first 3 months of the year. All right, so this is a problem. That is stagflation. That's the definition of stagflation, when you have no economic growth, but you got massive inflation. Economists had anticipated that we would be growing around 2.5%. So instead, we got 1.6, 2.5 versus 1.6. In the fourth quarter of 2023, so the last 3 months, the economy actually grew at 3.4%. So 3.4% was pretty good. You were going into the end of the year. What happened? Why are you down at 1.6%? Consumer spending came in pretty solid, but still a little weaker than what economists had been anticipating. And it seems as though consumers are pulling back pretty sharply on the spending of goods, because if you look at durable goods, they declined to 1.2% in an annual pace. Spending on services, they rose 4%. That's part of the inflation in there. And overall spending came in at 2.5%, below the 3% estimate and the 3.3% recorded in the first 3 months of 2023. In other words, the economy sort of sucks. Okay? We're looking at stagflation. And I can read you all these numbers, but you already get it. You got major inflation and you got no growth. I mean, 1.6%. It's not keeping up with inflation, shall we say. And yet they think you're so dumb that you'll believe the spin. Here's Joe Biden just moments ago doing a little speech, trying to say how great everything is. The economy's just great. Buddy, read your own reports. 1.6%, not great. But yeah, he goes out there and then he keeps flubbing his lines. He can't read a teleprompter to save his life. And at some point he said, hey, it's great. We're exporting American jobs. Listen for that one. Here we go.
It's clear we have the strongest economy in the world. That's a fact. 15 million new jobs created in 3.5 years. Unemployment hasn't been this low for this long for 50 years. Wages are rising. Instead of importing foreign products, we're exporting and exporting American jobs. We're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Here in America, where they belong.
Unbelievable. And just to set the record straight, you know what? Wages are not growing as much as inflation. Okay, so don't sit there and tell me that wages are growing and growing and growing when, in fact, inflation is growing that much more. You got to look at something, Joe, called real wages, okay? And when you look at real wages, you see real wages are not growing as much as inflation, and therefore, that is why people feel so freaking miserable. And he thinks that you ought to just buy his spin. How dare you not? He said it so. He wants you to believe it, and he sends out these. I mean, this is a great chart. Thanks for putting that one up, Drew. You've got energy prices up nearly 40% under Joe Biden. This is comparing Trump and Biden. You get gasoline up nearly 50% under Joe Biden. You get electricity up 30%. Nat gas up basically 30%. Eggs up 21%. We'll go down the list here. I mean, you guys know the drill, right? This is how much more stuff costs. Eggs, forgive me, are up 49%. Wow. Groceries overall are 21%. People are not making 50% more money. Yet they have to pay 50% more for their eggs, for their morning breakfast. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a problem. And they think that you're supposed to ignore it. And you're supposed to believe what they tell you like it's the gospel. Right? Like you can't question anything nowadays. If you do, you're part of the problem. You're one of those bad MAGA people. Here's Jared Bernstein. Going on, was it CNBC? I used to have him on my CNBC show. I mean, he will just say whatever he has to say. You know, I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but he will say whatever he has to say in order to spin. This is the spin machine. This is why it could never be. You know, people say, Trish, would you ever like go and be like the PR person, the spokesperson for a campaign? I'm like, I can't do it because I'm too freaking honest and I can't do what these people do. I just can't. But listen to him try and tell you, oh, it's all good. It's all good.
Now, we've seen a lot of news about energy from this president, you know, limiting LNG exports when it comes to future permits to non-free trade agreements. You've seen the Alaska Wildlife Refuge taking 13.3 million acres off the table. That's putting pressure on gas prices, which have been inching up over the past month. And we've seen overall CPI inflation go up. Maybe because of that, are you worried that inflation is not gone, first of all, and, you know, it's here to stay?
We have a lot more work to do on lowering costs on behalf of the American people, and that is absolutely at the heart of our agenda, whether it's negotiating lower prescription drug prices, capping the price of insulin at $35 a month, saving millions of Americans $800 a year on their insurance coverage. Our work is definitely
not done. Jared, lowering those costs are only for a small portion of Americans. You know, a lot of Americans are feeling all the gas prices going up. They're feeling, you know, a 19% increase in all items, grocery items up 21% since President Biden came into office. This is what people are feeling.
Hold on. Let's unwrap a lot of that, because I do want to get to the gas price. So grocery inflation, at least according to the Consumer Price Index, has been zero for the past 2 months. Now, that doesn't mean that grocery prices are back to where we'd like to see them, but grocery inflation has flattened a great deal, and that certainly helps, especially at a time when people's paychecks are beating prices. Again, 13 months in a row, in a year-over-year basis, mid-wage workers' wages have beat prices. Their buying power is going up. Now, let's talk about gas. So one of the things that we've seen in this economy is some of the highest levels of domestic gas production. We've also seen dramatically high levels of renewable production. So we are firing on both on both of those signals really aggressively. We have record production of traditional sources, record production of renewable sources. Now, obviously, we'd like to see those renewable sources continue to grow and, in the interest of fighting climate change, take over from the others. But at this moment, we have American oil producers making record profits and record production while we're still delivering on the renewable side. We think that's a good record, one we'll defend all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he wants to tell you everything's just great. And, you know, oh, we're producing all this oil. And you heard him say, and they're making record profits because, you know, if they can find a way to blame the companies, they will. Here's the deal. You need more. Okay, you just need more. Because people are driving more, they're consuming more. And if you don't have enough renewables, you're going to need the regular stuff. But when you cut off a large source of energy, as you did with Russia, and you no longer have the nat gas there, this is a global market, right? What does it do? It drives energy prices overall higher. And yet they can't seem to figure that out. The logical explanation would be, let's make sure that we have more energy here. And that we do everything we can policy-wise to ensure that. But they don't do that, which is another reason why I want to give a plug for my friends at Job Creators Network, because they understand these policies and they want to make sure that American businesses are here, ready, willing, and able to fight. Like, we have to, what happens, right, to America if we just sit back and say, okay, we're going to trust Biden and his team of ne'er-do-wells to run this economy? They're going to run it straight into the ground. I promise you that. I told you. You know, I hate to say I told you so, but I sat here and said, look, if this guy gets elected, it's going to be stagflation. It's going to be Jimmy Carter all over again on steroids. It's Jimmy Carter 2.0. That is what we are dealing with, ladies and gentlemen, because of irresponsible, not very intelligent people running the show. So Job Creators Network, they know how much local businesses are up against it in terms of costs, in terms of basics, like keeping your business safe. And what do? You're the small business. You don't have a big, huge insurance blanket to be able to help you when somebody comes in and steals. It's really pretty. It's disgusting to see how perverted all of this has gotten. I mean, but these guys are great. Job Creators Network, go over to their website. You can go to joinjcn.com and join them. I'm telling you, this is the, you know, they get such a grassroots level. So, you know, if you type in your zip code or you tell them where you are, they'll be able to help you connect with the proper resources in your community so that you're getting the benefit. You're getting the benefit of knowing everything that's going on and all the legislation that would help you as a business owner. Because I'll tell you, this team's not going to do it. The White House is not on the side of business. And that's pretty apparent. Why would you let so many people illegally into this country if you were on the side of business, if you were on the side, frankly, of Americans? Because our communities can't handle it. And when you don't know who's here, it creates a whole other series of problems. And it's going to come back to bite Joe Biden, I think, in this election, which we'll get to momentarily. But breaking news right now, Google, a.k.a. Alphabet, I should actually say Alphabet, a.k.a. Google, has just announced its first ever dividend. This is very interesting news. So, by the way, market's trading down pretty significantly today, in part because of the lousy GDP report and the realization that the Fed is in kind of a pickle because they're dealing with the stagflation that I always promised they were going to get. You had the Dow Jones Industrial Average off 375 points, a loss of about 1%. The S&P 500 trading at 5,000 and change, down 23 points. The NASDAQ Composite Index down 100 points. And the headline on the Wall Street Journal at this moment is the dream of a Fed rate cut is slipping away, right? Because how can you cut rates when you have this much inflation? But the trick is you kind of need to cut rates because you don't have an economy that's growing enough. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the stagflation that I promised would be on the way. Anyway, some pretty amazing news coming out of Alphabet, Google making the decision to offer a dividend for, I do believe that this is the first time that they have ever done this. So very, very big deal. Trading up in after hours, up pretty significantly. Wow, look at this. It just shot up 15.41%. A gain of $24 a share at $182.29. It had been trading down earlier in the session, down 2% at $157 and change. So this is a big jump. I think you can anticipate that shares of Alphabet, shares of Google, G-O-O-G is the ticker, will be moving higher tomorrow. You know what? If you're not investing, I'm going to tell you this, and I'm going to get on my, this is me being your mom for a second. I'm going to get on my soapbox and tell you, you need to be investing. You need to be investing. And it's just one of those things. You know what? You got to do. And I don't know if Social Security is ever going to be there for most of us. I would hope so. We've paid into it. But you're in a very tricky, tricky kind of world. And if you have anything, basically, you're suddenly someone who the government, the Democrats, feel that they can go after. So this is why it's so important for you to make sure that you do have what you can have and make sure that you protect those assets however you can. And this is why I just want to give a plug for my own company, which is 76 Research. I started with my very dear friend, Rob Horton, who I've known for years and is a brilliant investor, absolutely positively brilliant investor, and worked on Wall Street for over two decades, running billions of dollars. And Rob and I sat down and said, you know what, there's got to be a way to help more people. And so we came up with some model portfolios, and they're phenomenal. These are stocks you should be investing in for the long term, for the long term. I say that because, you know, there's a lot of investment newsletters out there that are like in and out of everything. And that's not really our style. We do talk about ideas on sort of a in and out kind of basis. But I would say that the foundation of what we're doing here is all about making sure that you're set up properly for the future. And you need the right companies in your portfolio to do that. And we change sometimes, right, depending on what's going on. But for the most part, we want to make sure that you get the right stuff. So go check out the model portfolios at 76research.com. You can also reach us at 76report.com. Actually, the new 76 report is coming out tomorrow. Great time to sign up. Very, very good timing. And, you know, there's just a lot of information there that I think that you will be very happy to be armed with as an individual investor. So a big plug for 76research.com. Turning to the poll numbers, I've told you that, you know what, it's the economy, stupid. And really, you know, when things are going well, you can worry about this, that, and the other. You can worry about mean tweets when things are great, right? When the economy's doing great and we're living in peaceful times, suddenly mean tweets take on a whole new aspect. Well, in this kind of environment, I have a feeling that people are saying, gee, you know, maybe if we had a few mean tweets, I could deal with it, because what I can't deal with is the fact that I'm paying so much more for everything. So the economy is really front and center on everybody's mind. Bloomberg came out with a new poll, and this was interesting because they had had it shortly after the State of the Union, and what you saw was that Joe Biden had made up a lot of ground. I mean, originally he was really struggling in these swing states, and then all of a sudden he did the State of the Union. Everybody's like, oh, okay, so maybe he's not about to... I hate to say that, but you hear them a lot and you're like, oh gosh, oh goodness gracious, it's time for the home, right? Well, he pulled it together. I'm curious to know how, but he pulled it together for the State of the Union. What is the expression? I want what he's taking, or what she's saying, you know, like that. He pulled it together. He managed to get through it. He got a little bit of a bump, but it was short-lived. It was short-lived. And then you got Donald Trump. Literally, all odds are stacked against him. He's got two simultaneous trials going on. One at the Supreme Court. He's got one in New York City. He's got Fannie still at it down in Georgia. And then Jack Smith, of course, in D.C. I mean, it's unbelievable. And yet, look at him in swing states. Bloomberg reporting on this. I mean, every single one of them, except for Michigan. Michigan is a little tougher for him. but he's doing well in all of these swing states. And I don't mean just well, like really, really well. So the reason for that is the economy. It's pretty simple. So simple that they even admitted it on Bloomberg Television, another place I used to work. Let's take a listen.
And a majority of swing state voters, Mena, see worsening economic conditions in the coming months. So that doesn't spell optimism for the Biden camp. Less than one in five respondents say they expect inflation and interest rates to be lower by the end of the year. And then more than three quarters say that Biden's responsible for how they feel about the economy, which isn't a very good mood. And more than half said that he is very responsible.
Yeah. He's very responsible. I mean, look, in fairness, we can't blame all of it on him because Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve, they're just out to lunch. They sat there for years and told us, oh, it's transitory, transitory, which, by the way, even just that word, transitory, come on. Oh, it'll go away. It'll go away. You know, this inflation is just going to be short-lived. And here we're dealing with it 3 years later. It's not transitory. It's not going away. And now we got the full-blown stagflation scenario that everybody has been, or at least I, was always worried about. So, yeah, it makes sense that people are blaming the guy in charge. I mean, they should blame the Fed as well. But Biden's the one who's out there telling you everything is so good. Everything is great. You know, the economy's doing just well. I don't understand why people don't understand how good the economy is, he tries to say. It's really kind of a big giant F you to America. It's like, you people, we think so little of you that we're going to try and use some big words like transitory and pretend that you don't know what you're talking about because the economy is actually just great. Well, you're right. They're wrong. The economy sucks. All right, moving on. Moving on. We're going to talk about these colleges. Donald Trump weighing in on these campuses, specifically the one at my alma mater, Columbia University, where apparently the students are saying they're not going to leave. They're not going to leave, even though the president of the university said, you gotta. Before we get to that, a quick shout out for my friends over at Balance of Nature, balanceofnature.com. I have been taking these vitamins now for several months and I love them. I take my fruits and veggies every single day. Like a good girl. You know, when I was a kid, my mom used to make me take the Flintstone vitamin. Well, now I take Balance of Nature, fruits and veggies. 1-800-246-8751 is their number. I encourage you guys to call this. I encourage you to try it. Go onto their website, balanceofnature.com, balanceofnature.com. Just look at it. Look at those testimonials. I mean, I'm not the only one talking about this. This stuff at least makes you feel really good. I am lousy on my fruits, better on my vegetables. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, I eat a lot of protein and I probably should eat more fruits and vegetables overall. And so this is helping me to get those vitamins that I so badly need. And I think it's really paid off. Anyway, 1-800-246-8751, discount code Trish, my name, T-R-I-S-H. It's going to get you 35% off, $10 off as well, and free shipping. Big deal. I don't think I've seen any other deal like that. So go there, check them out, and think about it. I mean, try it out. It's well worth it, right? How can it hurt? 1-800-246-8751, balanceofnature.com, discount code Trish. Oh boy, Columbia, what are we going to do with you? Columbia University in the hot seat still. The president of the university doesn't seem to know quite how to handle what has just exploded into a massive disaster, a disaster of epic proportions. I mean, you got even the White House saying enough is enough. And of course, you got President Trump weighing in from his trial in New York City today, talking about how crazy this is. Biden, and he's blaming Biden, you know it, has really helped to create a massive problem in American campuses with these kids just screwing up. Here we go. He was going to walk away, I think, and he comes back. Is this the right one? Oh, we got one more that we're going to show you. There we go. Drew's working on it. We're going to make sure that you have this soundbite because here he was coming out earlier this morning, and he talked to reporters about this. And, you know, he admits it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace what's going on. Let's listen. Okay, there we go. Here he is. He's walking out. Donald Trump about to talk to reporters here. And what is top of mind for him? What's going on at these colleges? These colleges are just awful. It is disgraceful that kids are being intimidated in the way that they have been intimidated. And he's calling them out. You know what? They need a new university president at my alma mater, Columbia.
And we hope the people get out there and vote. It's important to vote to let them know that we're coming on November 5th. We're coming big. Today is preliminary, but still it's very important. And maybe they'll think also about a very good person who's running for the Senate in Pennsylvania, Dave McCormick, and he's doing a good job. He's working very hard, successful man, wants to put his success to the country. He'll be a very good senator, so hopefully they'll be behind Dave and get out there and vote today. So Pennsylvania, get out and vote. What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU, and others, is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess. And if this were me, you'd be after me. You'd be after me so much. But to try to give him a pass, but what's going on is a disgrace to our country. And it's all Biden's fault, and everybody knows it. He's got no message. He's got no compassion. He doesn't know what he's doing. He can't put two sentences together, frankly. He is the worst president in the history of our country. And again, what's going on is a disgrace. Now, it's interesting outside. For great Americans, people that want to come down and they want to protest at the court, and they want to protest peacefully, we have more police presence here than anyone's ever seen. For blocks, you can't get near this courthouse. And yet you have nobody up at a college where you have very radical people wanting to rip the colleges down, the universities down.
So, you know what? He's not wrong. He's absolutely not wrong. In other words, there's so much emphasis on him, and we're lacking emphasis on the stuff that actually matters. In other words, get these campuses under control. When I was with you at this time yesterday, we were looking at pictures coming into us live at the University of Texas, where you actually saw the police arresting the kids. I'm like, hey, don't mess with Texas, right? We know. Even UT, which has gotten super liberal, they weren't going to put up with this. Well, the woman at Columbia, who, by the way, was born in Egypt and lived in Egypt until she was 5 years old, that's neither here nor there, but I am throwing that out there. She said they got to be off the campus by, what was it, 12 midnight the other night? And then she rescinded it. Because they said, we're not moving. And so she said, oh, well, okay. And she just has no one going to class. They've taken over the school. No one's going to class. And I'm like, how is that? I mean, it's like appeasement on steroids. The protesters are winning. They've taken over your school. Have you seen this video, guys? Drew, can we show this? This is just disgusting. I'm telling you, you know, Columbia doesn't deserve that. They really, and this might actually be NYU right there. But anyway, we'll keep fast forwarding in the video and see if we can get to Columbia, because it's just, it's nuts. It's happening all over the country. It's, you know, UC Berkeley, anytime they can get a chance to protest, believe me, they're doing it. And all of these people shouting this hate at Israel. I mean, how do you feel if you're a Jewish kid right now? How can you go to school? How do you feel protected? Look at how their faces are covered. They won't even show their faces. There's Columbia University, right outside the library there. I mean, this is just pathetic, okay? Absolutely pathetic. I'm disgusted. And it's a very different place than when I was there. It's been evolving. You know what? This has been going on for some time, guys. I mean, it's been going on, I want to say, for a couple of decades now. And it's really fascinating how quickly you can change a society, sort of just overnight in one generation. Where suddenly, you know, nobody knows if they're male or female. And suddenly, if you are checking certain boxes, you're supposed to get certain favors. And so we've lost what made America the place it is, that meritocracy that's unrivaled in the world. I mean, we're losing it in real time. They want to take it away from you. They want to take it away from your kids. And they want to give opportunity to those people that they deem, they think, deserve it. Not because somebody's worked hard, but because of a whole other set of reasons which are really inherently problematic in and of themselves. These kids are buying it. They're gullible, they're naive, and they've been taught that they can use whatever means necessary to get their viewpoints across. Well, Robert Kraft, you know, New England Patriots, he's not having it. He went to Columbia. He was on with my friend Joe Kernan this morning on CNBC, and I want you to hear what he had to say, because he gives tons of money to Columbia, and he's pulling it, pulling every dollar.
Welcome, Bob. It's good to see you, as always. This is the cover. Actually, the cover of the New York Post. Not everybody who's on the cover, you know, if you get on the cover of the New York Post, it's kind of questionable whether, but in this case, it's a positive thing for you, Bob. But you wrote an op-ed. What are the key points of what you put forth in that op-ed?
Well, I just, you know, I'm thinking of Columbia, where I went, and they have a core curriculum that really helped train me as a young kid coming from New England. You know, I wasn't ready for the world from Boston. And I think that Alexander and John Jay would be flipping in their graves if they saw what's going on at Columbia now, which was such an open forum. When I went there, you know, it was during the Vietnam War, and free speech prevailed, and people expressed their opinion, and they didn't cover their faces, and there was accountability. And there wasn't the anger and hate that exists now on campuses. And it's very sad to me to see the faculty taking strong positions and doing that and sort of trying to teach young people what to think rather than how to think, and have the openness. And, you know, you think about the greatness of this country is that people came from all backgrounds, and you came here and you felt, your ancestors felt comfortable, and they felt they belonged and they had a chance. And now it's shocking to me that young Jewish students at Columbia in New York City are scared. They're going home. There's a young student from the Boston area who came back 2 weeks ago and told their dad that they wanted a transfer out of Columbia because they didn't feel safe on the campus. And I'm going, this is 2024 in the United States of America. Am I hearing things right?
You are. And that's a sad thing. But you know what, Robert Kraft? Thanks for speaking up. Thanks for doing the right thing. Other people, Bill Ackman, another great example of a billionaire who's saying enough is enough and led the charge against Harvard University and MIT and UPenn and the rest of them. But as an alum of Harvard who donated a lot of money, he's like, you got to be kidding me. Very interesting exchange he had with, you know, Laura Loomer. She was on the show the other day on Twitter. The two of them were, you know, kind of going back and forth. And he was making some comments about Biden. And she said, hey, would you be willing to support Trump? And he said, yeah, I'm looking at it. You wonder how many previously uber left people out there, I don't know if he was uber left, but he was definitely left, are now saying, wait a second, we need to rethink all of this. We need to rethink this because this team, this guy doesn't stand for anything. And what he does stand for really isn't simpatico with our values and the values that have made this country what it is. These schools that have become so obsessed with diversity, equity, and inclusion. Listen, you know what? I got nothing against diversity. I actually think it's really, really healthy. But diversity of opinion, okay? Diversity of thought, not just diversity of color and sexual preference and how you identify gender-wise. No, we need more than that. We need real diversity. And real diversity means, yeah, sure, people from different backgrounds, people that think differently. There's no thinking differently in academia today. Everybody's cut from the exact same woke cloth. And you wonder why you get problems like we're seeing at Columbia right now. You wonder why the kids are like, no, I'm not going home. Why should I go home? I'm going to sit here and protest all day long, $67,000 a year, which gets us to a whole other question of exactly why is this happening now and who might also be involved. I mean, certainly you got some lefty politicians, AOC included, out there supporting this nonsense. You get professors supporting this horror. Can you imagine if these kids were saying what they're saying about Israeli students and how they're attacking them, if they were saying that about black students? I mean, this is not acceptable, guys, okay? It's just not acceptable. And the stereotyping has got to stop. I'm with Robert. Like, I am just stunned. I'm disgusted at all of it. I'm looking at some of the chats. Drew tells me we've got a super chat, so thank you for that. If we can, we can put some of the super chats up on the screen. Some of you have joined my membership, which I thank you for. And we're going to do that again this week. You know, I was gone in Ireland, had a wonderful, wonderful time. I'll tell you more about it in the closed chat. But it was really terrific. And we're going to do that tomorrow afternoon. So if you're not already part of the club, and if you're not already a team member, I encourage you to join. Some of you are like, wait, where are you? I'm actually back in my studio. And it's a work in progress here. So we're getting there. But this is the first day I've actually tried it out. So I still smell the fumes of wet paint and everything. And we're tweaking the lights. And we're going to put some more stuff in the bookcases and maybe get another camera in here as well. But I want to thank you for being here. Cheers to all of you. Remember, live free or die. We got a lot at stake right now. A lot. So be here. Subscribe. Share. Get the word out. Let it be known. Because together we are a force. Thanks so much. I'll see you tomorrow.